Fitheads, welcome to another episode of Sharing Our Pairings. This is Sharing Our Pairings, episode 77, Añejo Opus X and Japanese Whiskey. I'm your host, John the Cigar Surgeon, joined as always by my co-host, Robbie Raz. We are heard around the world on CigarFederation.com, YouTube, every podcast app under the sun, and some that even aren't. And of course, our friends and people who are keeping us safe around the world, the Armed Forces Radio Network. Thanks very much for listening to us wherever you are in the world. I know there's a lot of different people from a lot of different countries, and thanks very much for checking out our show. So I'm just smoking my tasty Opus X. We're going highfalutin. Rob, how's it going in sunny California today, brother?
Things are good, man. It is sunny as all get out, too, I'll tell you that. It's 94, 95 degrees, but it's beautiful. Yeah, it's a little warm, but but beautiful day. We've got I've got like a 4 or 5 year añejo going here, and we've got some really nice Japanese whiskeys coming up. This is one of the things in my week where it kind of gets me through that Wednesday. And we've never really referenced the fact that we have our show on hump day. It's actually kind of a perfect day to have it.
Kind of is.
You know, we start cracking open the whiskey at about 5 o'clock. Well, 5 o'clock for me. On a Wednesday is perfect, man. It's just that perfect little boost to get me through the rest of the week. everything else is great, man.
Yeah, really, how could you have a hard time smoking Opus X from Arturo Fuente? Now, just quick correction, because I put down that I had the Fuente, and just a quick slag on Fuente, because there's some things about the company. I mean, their cigars are absolutely incredible and amazing, and frankly, I love everything they put out, from the Hemingway up to the Opus X and everything in between. I love it all. It's delicious. But their banning method and their identification method, I mean, I don't want to have to go on a rabbit hunt, on a scavenger hunt to try and figure out what I'm smoking. It's really frustrating. That being said, it's worth it when you finally light it up. I'm actually smoking the Fuente Double Corona, which is a 7 5/8 by 49 ring gauge, so it's a monster. And it was funny because I didn't clue in when I'm taking a photo. I should have clued in. I'm like, this is not 5 5/8 inches. It's enormous. But whatever, I'm going to smoke the whole thing. I don't care. Talking a little bit about the Opus X, it's got that tasty Dominican Rosado wrapper, which I think they use in a lot of higher-end Fuente stuff. Of course, using Dominican binder and Dominican filler. And I just want to give a shout-out. This actually comes from, I was looking through my record of where this came from. This actually came from my Reddit R Cigar Secret Santa back in 2013. So I don't know how I haven't smoked this until now. I think it's one of those things where it's just been sitting on the top shelf and I've just been waiting for that right time. Tonight is the right time, Rob.
Absolutely. And I'll apologize to you because I was the one who pushed the idea of doing an Opus X show. And
Twist my arm.
Yeah. And I waited till the last minute, as always, to grab my cigar and take my photos. Although, when we do a Japanese whiskey show, a photo of the little bottle that John sent me with a little label on it isn't quite as sexy as, you know, showing off like the actual bottle. This is one of the few real bottles of Japanese whiskey that I own. So I usually take the pictures late anyway. As you can see on today's photo, there's no bottles in the background. And actually, I kind of got a little too artsy with the photo. You can't even really see the glasses in the background. But anyway, I liked it. I thought it was good. So today I'm going through all my humidors looking for my Opus X. And I know I've got about 4 or 5 of them. I know exactly which ones they are. And I couldn't find them anywhere. And it was a little bit frustrating. And there's other cigars that I noticed were not around. So I feel like I've got a Tupperdor or maybe a desktop humidor. I've got a desktop humidor that I didn't find today. I've got a desktop humidor hidden somewhere.
Somewhere.
In the house. And it's
secret,
got a
secret squirrel stash.
Yeah, seriously. That's funny how that just popped into my head. Anyway, so I went with the Fuente Añejo, and this bad dog has got like at least 4 or 5 years on it. Nice. I mean, this thing is super old. I know they've changed the bands on these, and you know, for you Fuente experts out there, you can tell me. I believe this is the older band. They have a kind of a gold rim across the bottom now, I think, and this one does not have that. But the Fuente Añejo, it's a yearly release from Arturo Fuente, limited edition, blah blah blah. It's got Connecticut broadleaf wrapper that is aged in cognac barrels. I'm looking here on one particular website. It says it's aged for 5 years in cognac barrels. Wow. I can neither confirm nor deny that. It's got a Dominican binder and Dominican fillers, and it's made at Tabacalera Fuente. Great cigar. These are, they're not cheap. They're in the pricier range. I'm smoking the 46, which is 5 5/8 by 46. And this is, it's actually, it's only $10. So
that's a steal.
Yeah, it's actually not that bad. The problem is finding them when they're in stock.
Yes.
This the 46 for me is, I believe this is the best size outside of the Shark, if you're really excited about the Shark, which is the, which one is that? The 77, yeah.
Yep. And, and it seems appropriate because this is our 77th show.
Oh, so, well, there,
we should have busted our Sharks, really.
It's funny. You know, I've got one, and I didn't smoke that one. I decided to smoke one of these because I've had these longer. But, yeah, I mean, just look at these. It's just a beautiful cigar.
Yeah,
and, I mean, the presentation, it's got the cedar sleeve and the footband and all that noise. But just a beautiful, like, deep, deep mahogany wrapper on this thing. And red and gold on the band. I've always been a fan of that, a 49er fan. But tough to be a 49er fan nowadays. But it's smoking beautifully. And we've got some great whiskeys here to get into. So I'm excited.
Yeah, me too. I'm just going to show off because I don't get very often a chance to bust out this lighter. This is my Prometheus lighter. It seemed appropriate tonight being the night. This is the Chateau de la Fuente Age Selection lighter. It's a triple torch, which is probably overkill, quite frankly, for most of the Fuente stuff. It's got a cool little, punch in the bottom, which I pretty much never use. But, cool little lighter, and seemed appropriate to break it up tonight. But really, we're not here to talk about lighters. We're here to talk about whiskey, and specifically Japanese whiskey. So I'm gonna talk about my first one. This is a new acquisition. I know I was on an acquisition hold, but I did finish a bottle, so I was able to pick up a new acquisition. Now, unfortunately, there's another new bottle, the Super Nika, that's out, and I think I might have to pick that up before the show and bring some samples down. But, I mean, one thing just to stand out here, Japanese whiskey, for the most part, they really have a good eye for presentation. I mean, this bottle looks beautiful. It looks classy. They've got the English, they've got the Japanese, a little bit about it. They've got from the House of Suntory Whiskey, established in 1923, letting you know that, you know, this is not a new thing. The whiskey itself, I'll try and sort of hand off my bottle. Like, I'm working cramped quarters tonight with anticipation of rain. It's got a very, very light color to it. Almost like a green apple. I mean, frankly, it's almost like clearer apple juice.
Yeah.
And the nose is just that beautiful apple. they say noses of grapefruit, green grapes, peppermint, and thyme. Now, I get the green grapes because it's got a grapey nose to it, but for me, it's like a really soft apple. I don't get any grapefruit. I don't get any peppermint. I don't get any thyme. This is 43%. Now, interestingly enough, this is blended. This is a blended whiskey, and we'll get into some of those questions later. But it's blended from Hakushu, Yamazaki, and Chita, which some other products are actually blended from Hakushu, Yamazaki, and Chita. And I think you're drinking one of those tonight. This is from the Suntory Distillery Group. And we'll talk about sort of the greater picture of Japanese distilleries, because it's kind of interesting how it's split up. But Suntory was founded by Shinjiro Tori, one of the founders of Japanese whiskey in Japan, back in 1923, and that was started with the first distillery in Japan, which is Yamazaki. Everyone's heard of Yamazaki ever since. A particular person wrote in his whiskey bible that it was the best whiskey in the world, and ever since then it's been huge. What I was thinking of you when I was reading this description, apparently for many, many years and still today, it's very popular tradition in Japan to do a highball. Now, a highball in Japan of whiskey is different than what you and I would think of as a highball. They consider a highball a measure of whiskey, fill the glass with ice, and then finish it off with sparkling water.
Interesting.
And it's a very popular traditional Japanese drink. They pair it very often with sushi, with other Japanese meals. And we might have to try that in the future. But for now, I'm just going to take some sips of my beverage and try to get a sense of the flavor profile and comparing that with the cigar, and let you talk about your first whiskey.
Cool. Yeah, I'm going with the Yochi 10 from Yochi Distillery. The Yochi Distillery was founded in 1934. It's funny to think about that, because Japanese whiskey, at least for me, feels really, really new. You know, I mean, just within the last few years.
Yeah.
I mean, it just seems like that was when we, and maybe it's just when I started to care So maybe it's been around. It's obviously been around longer than that. But it seems like it hasn't been a big deal on the American scene for that long to find out that these distilleries have been around since 1934. it was founded by Masataka Takatsuro. We've talked about that guy a lot.
Yep.
We've talked about that guy a bunch. I mean, he's kind of – you were just talking about him, weren't you?
So it was and we'll get into the politics of it because it's really interesting, actually. Well, maybe for me it's interesting. But so the two guys that really kicked off Japanese whiskey, Masataka Takatsuro is really the – you can really call him the godfather of Japanese whiskey. And there's a really cool romantic story there about how he went to Scotland, married a Scottish girl, brought her back to Japan. They had a really cool life together, but he was sort of the founder, along with Shinjiro Toro, who started Yamazaki, and they started Japanese whiskey distilling together. So that's really cool. Anyways, I'll let you carry on.
No, that's good. And I was just going to say he went alone to Scotland in 1918 to study the art of whiskey making, and I guess when he returned, he wasn't by himself.
Yeah,
he went home, brought himself a wife home. Good for him.
Get some, son.
I am looking for. I'm the one thing that I've noticed about these, especially Japanese whiskey. It is really hard to get specific information about specific whiskeys.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going through the websites right now, actually, and even I've been to this website, and even if I pull it up, it doesn't get. I don't get a lot of information about the Yochi Ten specifically. I mean, I've got some information about the distillery, but I don't know much about Yochi 10. I don't know if John, if you can chime in on any of that or not. But
So I mean, the interesting thing about Yochi is it's fairly new in the whiskey world.
Yochi, I've been saying Yochi.
Yeah, Yochi. I mean, I could be saying it wrong, but I'm pretty sure it's
no. Yochi. I think you're based on the way it's spelled, you're saying it right. Okay. I'm saying it wrong.
So what's interesting is Yochi is from Nikka. I'm drinking something from Suntory, you're drinking something from Nikka, and those are, so essentially to explain to people how this split, so Masataka Takatsuro founded Suntory, it was a company before Suntory, but he founded Suntory, and Shinjiro Tori founded Nikka, so there's really two competing companies, two huge, huge competing whiskey companies, and you know, there's obviously a little bit of love lost there. There's some politics there, but Yoichi, I think the oldest expression they have right now is a 10-year. They might have an older one, but I've only seen the 10-year. And I think that whiskey got a 93 from Jim Murray's Whiskey Bible, which is pretty high praise for a 10-year-old whiskey. And I think it comes in at, I want to say 43%, which is pretty standard for most Japanese whiskeys.
Yeah, I was just doing a little searching here. It does come at 43% ABV. And just on the nose, it's got some sweet notes to it. it's definitely on the sweeter side, and obviously I mean, compared to the cigar that I'm smoking, but it's got some sweet notes, a little bit of green apple. But it smells, it actually has, you know, when you're getting the nose off of whiskey and you just smell too much alcohol?
Mm-hmm.
That's what I'm getting. That maybe I have my nose too far in the glass, but I'm getting a little bit of that. And there's also like some orange peel, maybe orange blossom, something like that. And a little bit of honey. But anyway, it smells great. And if you want to get more information on the Yoichi 10, you can look it up, Yoichi 10. And I couldn't find out if they have older whiskeys or not. I mean, it looks like they do. But it's hard. I mean, it's really hard to find info on these things, man. Wow.
Yeah, pardon me. So I said I didn't think they had an older whiskey than 10. That's incorrect information. So they have a 10. They obviously have a no age statement that's very popular in Japan. They have a 12. They have a 15. They have a 20. They have a 23. And I think that's as old as it gets. They have some single cask bottlings, which is really cool. I'm a huge fan for single cask bottlings. I can imagine a 20 or 23 of a Yoichi would just be unbelievably expensive and unbelievably tasty.
No, this is amazing. I just took my first little pull off of it, and there's like a sugar cane kind of sweetness in there that's really, really nice. There's some fruity notes in there as well. A little bit of more of a sweet tropical fruit, like a papaya or something to that effect. But not that tangy citrus, but more of a sweet fruit undertone. And there's a little bit of earthiness in there as well, but not a lot. But it's not very briny or anything like that. It's just really, really smooth, nice sweetness. Wow, this is very, for a 10-year, this is, I can see why it scored so high. This is a very, very drinkable and approachable whiskey.
Just remind our audience, you're tuned into Sharing Our Pairings, episode 77, Añejo, Opus X, and Japanese Whiskey. I'm your host, John, the Cigar Surgeon, joined, as always, by my co-host, Robbie Rass. We are broadcast around the world on the Armed Forces Radio Network. Thanks very much, guys and girls, wherever you are in the world, for tuning in. We appreciate it. We're talking about Japanese whiskey. This Opus X, I mean, it's an Opus X. It's delicious. It's got chocolatey notes. It's got some spice. It's got so much body to it. It's interesting to me that they describe this as a full-bodied cigar because I think the roadmap has sort of moved, because what used to be a full-bodied cigar isn't maybe what a full-bodied cigar is compared to other products in the market. So I smoke this, and I kind of think of this as a medium plus. I mean, it's got a long way to go. I've just started with the cigar, but it's just kind of interesting to me they describe it as a full-bodied. With this whiskey, and we've talked about Japanese whiskey in the past, it pairs so beautifully with such a range of cigars. It's just unbelievable. And you know, that's, it's not me hating on Scotch whiskey, because I certainly have enough Scotch whiskey to last me a lifetime, and I love Scotch whiskey, but there's just something special about Japanese whiskey. And even though this is a no-age statement blended whiskey, it's delicious. It's just, it's got so much character, so much body. It's standing up to this Opus X, and it's pairing delightfully. You know, when I started out the Opus X, I was getting a ton of salty quality to it, like almost overpoweringly salty, and that's kind of given away since I've been sipping on this whiskey. I'm not getting any of the grapes, peppermint, or thyme, any of the peppermint or thyme they're talking about. But definitely the grapes, definitely some apple, some melon fruit, like very soft melon fruit. And, you know, it's so delightfully approachable. I could drink this all night and be very happy camper. How's that pairing going for you?
It's good. And actually, I need to correct something that I said earlier in reference to the Fuente. The filler and the binders are aged for 5 years in cognac barrels. Oh. And the wrapper, the cigar is built, they put the wrapper on it after those have been aged for 5 years. And then once the wrapper's put on, they age it for another year. I don't think they age it in the... They don't age it in the barrels, but they age the cigar for another year. So there's a lot going on with these añejos. It's also listed as more in the full side of things. And I think that's a more apt description for this cigar than it is for an Opus X, in my opinion. I still don't really think this is a full-strength, full-bodied... I mean, it's definitely full-bodied as far as a flavor standpoint, but I don't necessarily think of it as full-strength. Ton of flavor. It's got that rich, full body feel to it that's you know, you get from that Connecticut broadleaf. There's some sweetness, there's some chocolate, there's some like a nougaty type flavor that's in there. And look at the burn on this thing.
Yeah.
Precise as precise gets. And this has been sitting around in and I don't take very good care of my cigars, man. There's guys, I'll be honest, there's guys that I mean, they have like rotating schedules and they move their cigars around and all this and that. And I mean, really, God bless them, more power to them. And that's the kind of thing that, I mean, a lot of people do that. I'm kind of mean to my cigars in a way. I mean, they're handmade products, but they're also a little bit stronger than I think we give them credit for. Sure, you need to keep them in the right conditions, and I do. But I mean, sometimes things fluctuate, things happen. You don't check on your cigars for a while. I actually had a nightmare when I was in New York that I came home and one of my coolers had just been infested with beetles and everything was gone. And so the first thing I did when I got home, because it really stuck with me, was check that cooler, and everything was fine. But yeah, I mean, this thing's been through it for about 5 years. So for it to perform the way it's performing is pretty impressive. It's got a nice spice to it. It's not overpowering. The spice is actually held up. Usually that's the first thing to go, but that spice is really held up. Nice spice in the retrohale, the chocolate nougat, there's some earthy notes in there, and it's really, really nice. It's very different than the flavor profile that I'm getting from this Yoichi 10, but there is this lovely green apple flavor that it took a few sips for me to get it, and it's coming out, and it was really, really nice on this. This Yoichi's good, man. I feel like I say that every week. Oh, I need to buy a bottle of this, I need to buy a bottle of that. But this is really, really nice. The pairing is pretty good. It's better for the cigar, I think, than the whiskey itself. It's bringing out more of that sweetness from the cigar, a little bit more spice, some more of that richness of body and richness of flavor is elevated a little bit with from the astringency, I guess you could say, of the whiskey. It's kind of a nice, it's a nice boost for the cigar. I don't know that it's doing a ton for the whiskey itself, but it's a pairing that I'd be really happy to revisit.
A little bit about the price of this Toki that I'm drinking. I think I picked this up for $38 Canadian, so I'm reasonably confident that you could probably pick up a bottle of this for $30 American. And I got to tell you, for $30 American, if you're a fan of Japanese or Scottish whiskey, you got to run out and buy a bottle. It's a no-brainer to have in your collection, in your cabinet. I'm going to hop into an audience question here. Got an interesting question from Harley Holmes. Harley, thanks very much for asking a question tonight. Harley wants to know, can you explain the difference in Japanese whiskey versus American whiskey? And he's got a second part. He says, what is a good Japanese whiskey to start with? Did you want to touch on that, Rob, or do you want me to field that?
Well, it's better for you. I'll field the second part. How about that? You talk about that. You talk about the differences.
All right, so what's interesting for American whiskey, or otherwise called bourbon, or Scottish whiskey, otherwise called scotch, is that there is some criteria, and I'm not going to bore everyone with the criteria, because there's some aging criteria, minimum age statement that it has to be in a barrel for. There's requirements for where it has to be bottled and what kind of oak and casks it has to use. But at the end of the day, the simple thing to remember is that American whiskey has to be made in the United States. To be called bourbon, it has to, or Kentucky bourbon, it has to be made in Kentucky. For Scotch whiskey has to be made in Scotland. Very simple. If it's made in Scotland, it's Scotch whiskey. If it's not made in Scotland, it's not Scotch whiskey. Now, one could argue that Japanese whiskey doesn't necessarily have a character of its own. That is, you know, other than being made in Japan, there's no criteria other than that. Now, they have tried to maintain a level of consistency to make it as close to Scotch whiskey as possible. And I've said very many times that if you want really authentic Scotch whiskey, look no further than Japan, because they are very much in keeping with the authentic nature of Scotch whiskey. And that was really what they intended to do. Masataka Takatsuru strove to try and replicate Scotch whiskey in Japan. And as such, Japan has become a huge consumer of all things whiskey, and for many, many years. Obviously, they've been founded since 1923, but they were consuming Scotch whiskey far before that. So I'll let you take that second part, because I think you kind of did that, Rob. You kind of did a journey of Japanese whiskey yourself.
I did, and it started actually before we did sharing our pairings, I think, or at least before we did any Japanese whiskey pairings on the show. I think I've told this story before. There's a local restaurant. Unfortunately, isn't there anymore. The restaurant business is a tough business. And they had a great whiskey bar. And the Eleve was the name of the restaurant. It was in Walnut Creek. They had a great whiskey bar. And my wife and I had been there a couple of times. We got to know one of the bartenders. The guy's name was Pedro. And he was really, really cool. And he was from Nicaragua. I think I've told the story. We had a lot to talk about, blah, blah, blah. So he sampled a lot of different things for us. It's, you know, little pours. Maybe that's why they went out of business. He poured out all the whiskey. But I had never tried Japanese whiskey, and he had a handful that we tried, and then some good friends of ours had a few that we tried. And this was actually the first bottle, this Hibiki 12, which I'm going to get into next, that I purchased at the time. I think it was $45.
Yeah.
But now it's like 60 or 70.
Yes.
So as you, I mean, the rise, it's on the rise. And we've, a lot of the ones that we've covered, the Hibiki 10, the Yamazaki 10, I want to say that was, what was the one that had all the green apple, John, that you,
Hibiki.
No, it was
Hikushu.
Hikushu,
12,
that was
sorry.
The other one. Yeah. if you have a Costco membership and you're in, I mean, you're in the States, obviously, or at least in California, and I know Harley Holmes is, they've got a handful of different Japanese whiskeys at Costco. I know they have the Hibiki Harmony, which is their blend, and that one runs about 50, I think. They have a few different that we've been looking at. But this this Toki that you're talking about, I looked up online, and I see the prices ranging anywhere from $33.99 to $59.99. So it's going to be in that range if you can find it locally is going to be the hardest part. But, I mean, I would say just like anybody getting into Scotch, start with the basics. Find your, like with Scotch, you go with the Glenfiddich, the Glenlivet. Is it Glenfiddich or Glenfiddich? Because I always say it wrong. I feel like I say it different
every
time. I
think it's Glenfiddich.
Oh, so I said it right. And the real basic stuff, the Macallan 10, if you can find it anymore because it doesn't exist, but or no longer being made. But that kind of stuff. Start with that and go from there. I just start with the basics. And there's, I mean, there's blended versions coming out from everybody now that doesn't have the age statements, and they're a little bit cheaper, so more approachable on a bottle size, I guess.
So I think it's about time to get into our second whiskey of the night. Switching it up, so I'm going from Suntory all the way back to Nikka, which is what you were starting with. And I talked about this, I don't think it was the last show, but it was the second last show, and it's the Takatsuru Pure Malt. And I talked about having the Takatsuru 21, and actually I think we talked about it with when we had Fred on the show. And I'll be taking some samplers down to share and do our own pairing when we're in Vegas. But I mentioned that the Pure Malt was about 90% as good for about 90% less the price. Yeah. And that's not an exaggeration. It's you can see it again, elegant bottle. Obviously the name is derived from Masataka Takatsuru, who is one of the founders of whiskey distilling in Japan. I'll get into some of the background on Japanese whiskey in a little bit, but essentially the Takatsuru Pure Malt is again another blended whiskey. 43%, I already talked about the fact that it's named from Masataka Takatsuru. It's blended from, interestingly enough, Miyagikyo and Yoichi. So your first whiskey is part of the whiskey that goes into my second beverage here. And you can see I've gone from lightest to darkest, or going from lightest to darkest, and it's got more of an amber color to it. Oh, the nose is just, it's got such a sherry quality to it. And you know, man, I love that sherry cask. It's got a little bit of like a raisiny stewed fruit quality underneath, which is all kind of what I'm used to from anything with sherry influence. But it smells like it's got a lot more body than that Toki. The Toki was very delicate, but still stood up to the Opus X. I think this is probably going to be a better pairing spirit because it's got a little bit more body. It's going to stand up a little bit more to this Opus X. So I'm going to let you talk about your second pairing while I take some sips here and try and get some notes out of it.
Yeah, I feel like we're going in the same direction here. I'm going with the Hibiki 12, which I've shown you guys the bottle a couple of times. Here it is again. And this is from Suntory, which your first one is from Suntory. So we're going backwards. Yeah, we're kind of trading places, if you will. The Hibiki 12, it's a 12-year-old blended whiskey. So this one includes whiskeys from Yamazaki, Hakushu, and Cheetah, which is, I mean, those were the same. Are they the same ones your first one is from?
No, my first one was... Oh, yes. Yeah, exactly the same.
Yeah.
Yes.
So it's funny how there's all these different products coming from... And it's very similar to the American whiskey market. I think if you think about it, when it boils down to it, there's like 7 or 8 big distillers where... even fewer than that, probably 4 or 5 big distillers where everything comes from. pardon me. Let's see, it's from Suntory, like I said, 12 years old. What is the ABV on this thing?
I want to say it's 43%.
It is 43%.
It's almost always 43.
It'd be kind of funny to try all of them blind and see if they taste different or if they're all the exact same product with just different marketing. It sounds like a really good day. Let's see, so it's got some shiny amber in color, obviously. A little bit darker than what I was having before. But as you were saying, John, the nose on yours, the nose on this one, much more fall style nose to me. It's got like apple cinnamon, some deeper stewed fruit notes. It's a bit heavier on the nose. Just feels like it's going to have a bit more body to it, a bit more of an oomph to kind of stand up to this this añejo. I'm definitely getting a lot of apple on the nose. Like a stewed plum almost. Oh. If that makes any sense.
Yep.
It's got kind of and a little bit of almost like a cinnamon spice, which might just be I might be just conjuring that up because it makes me it smells like fall to me, and there's some brighter notes in there, some brighter fruit notes, but it still has that sweet, spicy, kind of stewed fruit flavor thing going on. I'm really excited to see how this pairing works. Obviously, as you can see, I've had plenty of this this Hibiki. This bottle I've probably had for about 3 or 4 years. So I got about a third of it left. This is the one that gets put on a shelf in my bar, and it kind of works its way back as the year goes on, and I always forget that I have it. So it's probably why there's so much left in there. But I want to jump in here and see how this is going to pair. I have a good feeling about this one.
One of the things I like to do when I'm doing a whiskey tasting or a scotch tasting is I leave a little bit in my glass and I go back to see how much the nose evolves. And it's not so much that the nose is evolving, it's more that my palate and my nose is getting more acclimated to the spirit. So when I go back to this Toki, and I mentioned it was very soft, and now that I nose it, so I'm going back to my first whiskey here for a second, I'm getting a ton of green grass, and then I'm getting like a sponge cake, like you know, like an angel food cake. I'm getting tons of that off the nose, which is really interesting. So I'm going to go back at the end of the show, and I'm going to take a quick taste and see how much my palate has evolved. But bringing it up to current, talking about this Takatsuru Pure Malt, it's interesting because it's got a lot of body to it, but I don't think my palate is quite ready. I should have had some soda water here to kind of cleanse my palate because it isn't as evolved as the Toki. I get a lot of that spicy note off the whiskey, which I think is got to be sherry cask influence. I do get that Mizunara wood influence. And typically when I think of a Japanese oak Mizunara wood, that's where I get that green apple and that sort of really light melon fruit. And I find Mizunara is just so soft and so elegant, but so deep. Like there's so many depths to the flavor there. I'm really excited to see some of the Scotch distilleries in Scotland start using Mizunara as an experiment to age their product, because I think it's going to come up with some really cool concoctions. But this Takatsuru definitely has a lot more body than the Toki did, and it's standing up to the cigar a little bit better. But I don't think my palate is quite acclimated, so I'm going to take some more tastes. And now that you've had some sips, excuse me, let you talk about that.
Yeah, the 12, it doesn't taste the way it smells. It's a lot of apple up front, like a green apple, bright, crisp green apple up front. And there's that more that stewed fruit is in the background. It's spicy, but it's not like a cinnamon spice like it smelled to me. And actually, now I don't even smell that anymore. I think that was just my mind's playing tricks on me. And I won't do the whole song. That's the only part I'm going to do. But good song, though, from Ghetto Boys. I drop a Ghetto Boys reference. You weren't ready
for that. Yeah, that's good. But it's a music reference, so, you know, lost
on
me.
Yeah, true story. So I'm getting a lot of that apple. I'm looking at the tasting notes here, things that you're going to taste in the palate, banana, pomegranate, custard. The custard sweetness, I definitely get that. To me, it wasn't populating in my brain as custard. It was just kind of a creamy sweetness, which I guess is kind of the same thing. And they say a pink pepper, and that's that spice that I'm getting. I wouldn't have classified it as a pink pepper. I would have said more of just like the term that I use for kind of an empty spice flavor is like a white spice, whatever that means. Yeah. I'm not getting that banana or pomegranate that they're leading with, but I mean, maybe that's kind of, those two things are combining to get into that stewed plum note that I'm getting. It's a fantastic pairing. It's bringing out even more richness in the cigar. It's bringing out more spice in the cigar on the retro. It's really, really nice. It's like a crisp, clean spice. That chocolate sweetness is still there, but it's not quite as overpowering. It's become more like a bittersweet chocolate now, like a dark chocolate. That goes really, really well with the fruit aspect and the sweet aspect of this. This is a really, really nice pairing. Lots of highlights on each side. It's delivering the things that the Yoichi was lacking that I didn't even realize the Yoichi was lacking, if that makes sense. It's got enough body to it. It's like, I feel like these two, like before the, we'll use an analogy here, before the Añejo was fighting kind of below its weight class, if you will. I mean, the Yoichi didn't really stand a chance. The pairing was okay. It wasn't bad, but now I think this is a bit more of, these guys are kind of on even keel here. As far as size and strength and oomph, if you will, it's a real nice pairing, and this is one that I would like to revisit.
I think we're probably progressing in the same direction, because I think this Takatsuru Pure Malt is fighting, as you say, in the same weight class as this Opus X. Every taste sort of finishes with this nice spice. Again, I associate that with sherry casks. Sherry cask has this wonderful spice. It's not overpowering. But what it's doing for the cigar is it bring tons of creaminess and sweetness out of the Opus X, which it wasn't getting with the Toki because the Toki was so sweet. So the Toki was bringing all that spicy character out of the Opus X, and now with the Takatsuru Pure Malt, I'm getting all this creaminess, and I'm still getting a really nice, elegant spice out of the retrohale. And I think, you know, an Opus X, definitely one of those cigars you got to retrohale. If you want to get the full experience out of it, there's so many layers to it. I still do get a little bit of saltiness on the post-draw, which I think works really well with the whiskey because it, it just supercharges that whiskey. But yeah, great pairing. I think, I mean, they're all great pairings, but this is probably more along the same strength level for this cigar.
Yeah, if you're not retrohaling, you're doing it wrong. I don't know how else to say it.
Yeah.
And it's there's you don't have to retrohale everything. Just I retrohale on every puff usually, and anywhere between 25% and 50% of my exhale is a retrohale. And I mean, it takes practice. You got to get used to it. But like I said, you're missing out on a lot if you're not doing it. I tried to explain this. My idea with, or the way that I think about retrohaling and with tasting of a beverage, you have to get that nose. I mean, you have to be able to smell it. And we had folks over for 4th of July, and they were asking me why you shouldn't drink like an IPA out of the can. And some say that you can, and really you could. So we did a little like a side by side type thing. I had some grapefruit Sculpin, and I had it out of the can, and then I had one in a glass, and I said, "Well,
nice.
Taste it and tell me the difference." And it's surprising how much you miss out on if you're not getting that nose of things, if you're not getting a good sniff of what it is that you're drinking. And when you take it out of the can, there's nowhere for that aroma to go.
Yeah.
So anyway, this pairing is great. I kind of waxed on poetic about it already. I'm reminded at how freaking good these añejos are.
Yeah.
It's a cigar that I don't smoke it, you know, super often, because in the past it was hard to get your hands on, but I happened to look up on Neptune Cigars, so it's neptunecigar.com, and they've got a bunch of them in stock, actually, depending on what size you're looking for. Well, they've got two of them in stock, I should say. They've got, they actually have the Big Papo Collection sampler, 10-stick sampler in
that's
stock.
A sweet deal.
That's pretty cool. But they've got the 48 and the 49 in stock, which are a little bit bigger than what I like, but... if you can get your hands on some of these añejos, it's definitely worth the investment, because, I mean, if you like a richer cigar, it's got a lot of richness, a lot of sweetness, that kind of chewy Maduro feeling that I've loved since I started smoking cigars. I've always loved that, and this kind of brings me back to when I started smoking and how much, this was like the first cigar that I smoked and was like, wow, that's what a really, really super premium cigar tastes like. It's like, oh crap, this is so much better than some of the other stuff I've been smoking. Not that the other stuff was bad, but this is just on a different level. It's like the first time you watch Michael Jordan play. I mean, you realize, oh man, he's just on a whole different level. So that's the añejo to me, and I'm glad that I couldn't find an Opus and I'm smoking this one.
Just a reminder to our audience, you're tuned in to Sharing Our Pairings, episode 77, Añejo Opus X and Japanese Whiskey. I'm your host, John the Cigar Surgeon, joined as always by my co-host, Robbie Rass. We are heard around the world on the Armed Forces Radio Network and, of course, on every podcast device in the world. We're doing some Arturo Fuente pairings with some Japanese whiskey. And I just want to take it back to something you commented on with the tasting in the nose. And I think something that people really need to understand is that while your taste buds are very strong, and you know, depending on who you ask, you've got five taste centers, really six, because umami, which the Japanese have really coined, is sort of texture, and your tongue definitely can taste texture. And we talk about that when you get a velvety smoke from a cigar, that is contributing to the flavor. But ultimately, 90% of what you're tasting, I think when we had Tony Bellotto on the show, Tony talked about this, 90% of what you're tasting is going to be through your nose. So if you're not engaging your nose in that tasting, you're really missing out on a ton of complexity there. But I digress. We'll go into an audience question here. Bob Dog has asked a question. Bob Dog always asks questions, and they're always good questions. And Bob Dog wants to know, does Japanese whiskey generally have an age statement on their whiskey? And that's a really interesting question, because essentially I've gone with entirely no age statement whiskeys tonight.
And so I've done the opposite.
And you've done the opposite. So we really didn't set out to try that, but that's kind of where we landed. And I would answer the question like this. The majority of the whiskey that's consumed in the world, whether it's Japanese whiskey, whether it's Scotch whiskey, or whether it's American whiskey, is a no age statement. And it's something like, I want to say 90 to 95% of the whiskey consumed in the world is no age statement. And it's kind of one of those things where, you know, bringing it back to cigars, we talk about everyone loves Lanceros. Well, sort of. The cigar geeks love Lanceros, but what do most people smoke? They smoke Robustos and Toros. That's what most people smoke.
And they're smoking mild Connecticuts.
And they're smoking mild Connecticuts. So, does most Japanese whiskey generally have an age statement? If you looked at the number of releases, no. There's a lot of age statement releases out there, certainly in Scotch whiskey, certainly in Japanese whiskey, absolutely age statement. But if you look at volume-wise, most production is, in fact, no age statement. So I'm a bit of a, I don't want to say snob. I do have a discerning palate. I do like age statement whiskeys, but ultimately I'm smoking and drinking for taste. So if you bring me a no age statement whiskey and it's Japanese and I enjoy it, I don't care whether it's got an age statement or not. If it's got age statement, great. If it doesn't, great. Just as long as it tastes good. That's ultimately what I think looking for.
And the thing that you always, or at least that I forget, is that the bulk of the whiskey, at least consumed in this country, is Jack Daniels and Jim Beam and Maker's Mark and Bullet. I mean, companies like that, whiskeys like that. It's sorry, I just had a text message pop up on my screen, and it's my buddy. My buddy Billy, and the text says "Nope!" exclamation point, and he sent me a link, and it says. I can't tell what website it is, but it's the first look at Pennywise in the new It movie from Stephen King, because they're making a movie out of it.
Of course they are.
And no, I love that story. I'm actually listening to the audiobook right now, and it's fantastic. But clowns freak me out, and he's just like, nope, and I can't wait to click on it and see what it looks like. But I digress. What was I saying before that?
You're talking about the majority of...
Yeah, I mean, think about it. The majority of the whiskey that's consumed is Jack and Jim Beam and Jack and Coke and that type of stuff. Or you could even go Canadian whiskey with your Crown Royal and things of that nature. So that's the bulk of the stuff that people are drinking that doesn't have that age statement on it. And, you know, there's gonna be, you know, barrel-aged or single barrel or different versions, different titles that they're given without giving an age statement. So... yeah, I think I don't know the numbers, but I think you're probably right that the bulk, the vast majority of whiskey in the world is no age statement. But that doesn't make it bad.
Nope. Thanks very much for your question, Bob Dog. We always appreciate questions to the show. You can always ask them going to CigarFederation.com, checking out our show page, and clicking on the link. It doesn't work on mobile. Sorry, guys. That's the technology we're stuck with. So I'm moving into my last whiskey, which is another release from Nikka. And we might have to talk about Japanese whiskey distilleries in the After Dark segment, because I don't know if we have enough time tonight. But I talked about this, I think, a few shows ago when I was having, I think I had the Pure Malt Red. I think it was the Pure Malt Red or the Pure Malt White. At any rate, tonight I'm drinking the Pure Malt Black. And it's one of three products. It's the red, the white, and the black. And... it's, again, another blended whiskey. It's 43%. That's kind of the standard for Japanese whiskey. They don't release products at 40%. They typically release products at 43%. And you know what? Power to you. I appreciate that. This is another blended malt. I don't have the component distilleries that go into it, because they're very tough to find sometimes on the blended malts, but I know that a lot of the nerdy whiskey guys out there will find it, and I appreciate that. So they say that this blended malt is characterized by powerful peat. Now, powerful, of course, being by Japanese standards, a rich taste and firm flavor. Now, when I nose it, I'm definitely getting that Islay peat sort of nose to it, which is really nice, and it's going to be interesting to take something that's got peated whiskey in it and compare that with, see how it compares or contrasts with this Opus X. But you can see, again, we're going from lightest to darkest. It's actually a little bit lighter, I think, than the Takatsura Pure Malt. It's very, very close. It's almost a brown color than an amber color. But like I said, the big characteristic is that peated nose, which, since I drink a lot of peated Islay whiskey, this is not as peated as, you know, a lot of the Islay whiskeys are peated whiskeys from Scotland, but... the Japanese flavor profile is typically a lot more nuanced, so they're not looking to blast my nose away with smoky peat. But I'm going to take some sips and let you talk about your last whiskey here.
I do like the peated. I'm going with the Miyagikyo 15.
Get some sun.
And that's it's a little bit more on the dark side, a little bit darker. Little info, again, tough to find information. It's from the Miyagikyo Distillery that was founded by... Masataka Takatsuru, again. It's been opened in 1969, and I didn't realize that the name Nick is. Does the name Nikka come from the Nikagawa River?
I don't think it does. It might, but I don't think it does.
Interesting. Anyway, spelled the same. so this one is, I believe this is a single malt. So it's not a blend. This is the high end business right here. And again, thanks to John for sharing this stuff with me. Miyagikyo 15, Jim Murray. Is that, you know, your boy, Jim Murray?
Oh yeah.
He's a big deal, huh?
He's something. I mean, there's a lot to be said about Jim Murray. He might be an expert in the whiskey world, but I think as a person, as a human being,
not so much.
Maybe not the best kind of guy out there. But we won't talk about that because we're going to keep it classy and debonair here on JR Pairings. But anyways.
Copy that. Moving forward. Well, he gave it a 92. So for whatever that's worth. looking here, it's from the Miyagikyo Distillery. Is the bottler is Nikka, and that's really what they're giving. They give me some notes on the nose here. It's very sweet with vanilla fudge, and it's funny because it does have not a pure chocolate smell, but I was going to say like a white chocolate. And there's definitely some spice, a lot more body, I think, and a lot more sweetness, I think, than the previous two that I've had. so they say the nose, very sweet, it is, with vanilla fudge, toffee, apple, and spice, and it's definitely there. Straightforward nose without heaps of complexity, but very charming nonetheless. Interesting. So the palate, they say it's malty, toffeed, generally fruity. And that sounds like that's going to be really, really nice with this. A little bit of extra malt that's in there. That's one thing that was missing from the other two is kind of that malty backbone and that kind of toffee note. It's a different side to that sweetness. I'm really curious to see. I don't have a ton of it, but I'm really curious to see how this pairing works. I have really, really high hopes.
Yeah, well, I know you had the Miyagikyo 12, and I was really excited for you to try the 15, because even though they're from the same distillery, it's one of those things where the 15 is a totally different spirit than the 12. Like, you can get that it's from the same distillery, but the flavor profile is so different. Talking a little bit about this Nikka whiskey, the Pure Malt Black, again, wonderfully balanced. The peat just adds a great depth of character, and I'm kind of reminded a little bit of the Chichibu the Peated, where even though it's heavily peated, they're not blending for peat, they're blending for flavor profile. And it's actually working wonderfully with the Opus X. Curiously, out of the Opus X now, I'm getting almost a pencil lead kind of flavor, like a cedar and a pencil lead flavor out of this cigar. So totally different flavor profile from the cigar when pairing with the spirit, but it still works for me. I'm still getting, you know, something that's workable. Did I enjoy the Takatsuro Pure Malt? Yes. Am I enjoying the spirit from the Nikka Whiskey Company, which is completely different? Yeah, it's still working. I mean, two very, very different spirits, but both seem to work, and I'm enjoying it. I'm actually looking forward to hearing what your notes are on the Miyagikyo 15, because that's a really good spirit. I really enjoy that very much.
It's interesting. It's it's got that, what they called, excuse me, in the Hibiki, they called it a custard note. And I'm getting like a heavier version of that.
Yeah.
And I almost want to say cookie dough. And it's a bit thicker. It's a bit sweeter. It's definitely got that toffee note in there. And there's a little bit of spice. It's more palate coating. It's bigger. It's just bigger. I don't know how else to say it.
Yeah.
And it's bringing out a really unique, that nougaty flavor that I was getting out of the cigar earlier has kind of ramped up. And if you guys have read any of my reviews that reference a cigar that's got nougat in it, I love that flavor in my cigars. The dark chocolate is even going a little bit further in the dark chocolate range. I actually, the other day, my wife was making, she wanted to make some hot fudge. To make sundaes, and she got some pure dark chocolate, 100% dark chocolate.
Oh, wow.
Have you ever tasted that?
I mean, it's funny because I've been kind of on a high-end chocolate cake, like 85% plus cacao, and what a difference that makes.
But 100%, man.
That's crazy.
I said, I really want to taste it. She's like, are you sure? I said, yeah. And I went to take a bite, and she was holding the piece, and she kind of pulled it, so I didn't take a bigger bite.
Yeah,
it is super bitter.
Super bitter.
There's no sweetness. It's not sweet at all. I mean it's sweet because it's chocolate, but it's not chocolate.
It's not what you think about when you think about milk chocolate.
Exactly. It's so different, and it's even so different from like an 85%, 75%. You pick those up at like Trader Joe's. Those are great. this was tough, man. And yeah. the chocolate in here is kind of going in that direction. But that nougaty note is coming out and balancing it out. The heft or the girth, whatever. Girth? We're not going to talk about girth, are we? just kind of the, I don't know how to say it, like just the heft of the of the mouthfeel. Maybe it's the mouthfeel.
Yeah,
of,
I think you hit it in the head when you're talking about, like, it's got a heavier mouthfeel, like almost yeah. a syrupy mouthfeel.
Yeah, and it's kind of coating, and it's this has taken the pairing into a totally different place. It's almost like going from like a regular hot chocolate to like when you get hot chocolate and churros in Spain, because the hot yes. chocolate's like a syrup. It's yeah. not something that you want to take a sip of. It's the flavor characteristics are the same, but they're just everything's enhanced. It's on steroids. It's just totally juiced up. I'm getting a little fired up because this is a really good pairing. And I know I'm probably never going to have it again. So I want to kind
Unless
of enjoy.
You go down to Vegas.
Yeah, I just kind of want to enjoy the moment because I'm looking at this Miyagikyo and it's like $150 a bottle if you can find it, and I'm probably never going to find it. And if I do, I'm probably not going to be able to pull the trigger, just because I have a hard time doing that. But this is phenomenal. The toffee note, that thicker custard, and it's calling it cookie dough isn't right, but that's the only thing that in my mind that comes close. It's just a heavy, sweet, toffeed flavor with a little bit of spice on the end, and you mix that with that deep bitter chocolate and some nougaty notes and that richness. It's fantastic, man. It really does. I'm glad. I feel like I have had this Miyagikyo 15 before, and I might want to look back in one of the older shows because it looked like I had poured out about half of the sample that you sent me, or maybe I just drank it on my own. Who knows? But it is. I'm glad I saved it for this because this is fantastic.
So I'm kind of going back here and just nosing and tasting some of the spirits that I started out with, the Toki, which again is very light, it's very delicate, it's grassy, it does have that grape quality, but it's also got that sort of spongy angel food cake to it. The Takatsuro Pure Malt, again tons of Spanish cedar or not Spanish cedar sherry casks influence, where it's got that sweetness, it's got that pepper, it's got the stewed fruit. Really interesting. And then getting into the Pure Malt Black, where it does have that peat. But again, it's, you know, they say it's peated. And I'm sure by Japanese standards, it's heavily peated. For me, it's elegant. It's got smokiness to it. It's not just taking the entire profile over. I think each of these paired in a really interesting way. The Toki, I think, is a great way. The Toki or the Hibiki are really great Japanese whiskeys to get into. If you haven't had Japanese whiskeys, they're kind of Japanese whiskey training wheels. The Takatsuro Pure Malt is probably the best pairing for me tonight, but I'd say that Pure Malt is a very close second, just because it's a different spirit. It's an entirely different spirit from the Takatsuro Pure Malt, but they all work for me, just in different ways. How is your? What would you say your favorite pairings are for the night?
I think our experiences were very similar, but I want to go back and make a note. The flavor that I'm getting out of this Miyagikyo 15, it's like a butterscotch pudding, but like a really not overly butterscotched, but just like really nice, maybe a bit more dense, almost like the filling in like a creme brulee,
yep,
or even like a toffee creme brulee. Like it's that type of sweetness that I'm talking about. It's fantastic. So I'm going to go back and do the nose thing because I did keep a little bit of each one. And now I go back to this Yoichi, and it's super light.
Yeah.
Super, super light. Green apple. And just a really light green apple. That's really all I'm getting. Maybe a little bit of spice, but not much. And the pairing there, like I said, the pairing was fine. It was better for the cigar than it was for the whiskey. And I think one thing that we've noticed, or at least that I've noticed about Japanese whiskeys, of all the Japanese whiskeys that we've had, is they're not going to overpower your cigar.
Yeah.
They're not, unless you're smoking something super, super light, which you shouldn't be, while you're pairing these, but they're not going to overpower you. So I almost feel like taking this Yoichi 10 and going, it was kind of a running joke with us, but going with something with a Cameroon wrapper, mm-hmm. Like a Hemingway, if you want to keep it in Fuente, and it's something like that, that might be a real nice pairing. Kind of bring down the strength and the aggressiveness, if you will, of the cigar, and bring in that Yoichi 10 with just kind of lighter fruit notes, a little bit of earth, a little like that grassiness that you were talking about. That's not super grassy, but it's there. That might be a real nice pairing. I go back to the Hibiki, and the nose is much sweeter now, I think, than it was before. And I get more of like a... I almost smell that banana that they were talking about, that I never really got that before. But the nose doesn't seem to have the depth that I feel like it had before. And then when this McGeekio, it's just toffee, toffee, toffee. Toffee, toffee, a little more toffee. Oh, man, it's so good. But that's... The pairings for me are in the opposite order that I tried them. This Miyagikyo and Añejo pairing is one that I'm going to probably talk about for a while. And it's the type where it's like, you remember where you were when you had it, you know? So I'm going to say, yeah, that was, we did Sharing Our Pairings episode 77 when I had that. And it was awesome. It's just phenomenal. They elevate each other in such a beautiful way that it's like they were kind of meant to be. I'm going way too far with this, but it's really freaking good, man. It's hard to pull the punches on this one. It's fantastic.
Yeah, I think it'd be interesting, and we might have to. I'm sure we're gonna have future Japanese whiskey shows where we do a Cameroon wrapper. I think it'd be interesting to pair Connecticut with Japanese whiskey because I think they are versatile in the way that they pair. It's almost like they rise up a weight class in terms of the cigar they're pairing with. Like the fact that a light whiskey can pair with what's considered a full-bodied cigar is really quite phenomenal because, if we were pairing to bring it into the beer scale, pairing a really light beer with it, I think the beer would be completely run over. But it's interesting when you talk about whiskey spirits, totally different. So, we've only got a few shows left. In fact, one show left before we get into the IPC beer coverage, which is going to be really interesting. But tomorrow night, we've got Cigar Chat with Cornelius and Anthony, which will be a great show. And then Pipe Dummies is back on its regular schedule of Tuesday, so make sure to tune in with that. And next Thursday, we're going to kind of have a little bit of pre-IPCPR coverage. And we're also going to have SaveTheLeaf.org on the show, which will be really cool, so make sure to tune into that. And I just want to thank all of our Armed Forces Radio Network listeners, wherever you are stationed in the world. Hope you are staying safe and hope you have a chance to enjoy a good cigar. Maybe the Cigars for Warrior Project has sent cigars out to you. Hope you've had a chance to enjoy those and had fun. But as we always say in Sharing Our Pairings, drink better, but drink less. Japanese whiskey, man.
That's the best Japanese whiskey pairing I've ever had.
It's so fucking good.
Yeah, it's I can't. I just finished it, which is a sad moment. But yeah, it's it's like the, I guess creme brulee, like a toffee creme brulee, is the best way to say it. A little bit of that vanilla flavor in there, and it's a thicker flavor, a bit more syrupy. And the cigar kind of cuts through that. It was a really nice pairing. I'll talk a little bit more about this añejo. Look at that burn. And that's like razor sharp. And again, we're halfway through it. And like I said, I'm mean to my cigars, and it still performs. Fuente is one of those companies we don't talk about them very much because we're kind of boutique centric here on Cigar Federation and definitely in our show, and sharing our pairings here, but. They're beautiful cigars, man, and there's absolute. I know there's a lot of guys who only smoke boutique, and I'm not going to smoke anything from this company or that company because they're too big. There's absolutely no reason to not smoke an añejo unless you just don't like good cigars.
Yeah,
that would be, and that's. I'm sorry for you if that's how you feel.
I'm so sorry for you. And we were kind of talking pre-show, and I said, some of the greatest cigars come out of Nicaragua. I mean, we are a very boutique way centered. There's a lot of great boutique cigars out there. But, when I think about, like, core, high-end, amazing cigars, it, this is no disrespect to any cigar companies out there, because there are a lot of great, great products that I enjoy, but my mind immediately goes Padron from Nicaragua and Arturo Fuente from the Dominican Republic. I mean, those are kind of the crown champion of, I can go into a store, I can pick up any of those products, smoke it and have an amazing experience. Not a good experience, not an okay experience, but an amazing experience. And, Fuente is one of those products where, kind of like Padron, frankly, that I've always got a box of something from them in my humidor. Like Fuente, it's the Hemingway's. I really, really like the Hemingway. It's a versatile cigar. I like the short stories because they're like a little 45-minute, 50-minute smoke.
Yeah.
I smoke those things like they're candy. Like I go through a box of those every 3-4 months. Because they're so good. They're just so good.
Yeah, absolutely. I feel like we should do a Padron show. I think we've done one in the past.
Yeah, we did a highfalutin show where we busted out the, I think we had the Padron 64s. I need more Padron, frankly. I mean, I need more Fuente too, but I was looking in my Humane. I think I've got another of these delicious Opus X double Coronas. I think I have an Añejo. I've smoked my Shark already because I think I was doing a store opening and I was like, fuck it, I'm having a Shark. Like, you know, I'm gonna smoke something really good. And but yeah, I mean, the same with Padron. Like one of my favorite cigars of all time is the Padron Family Reserve 1926. Like, it's just, forget about it. That's like the high mark for cigars to be measured against for me.
Have you have you smoked enough of the Añejo to say that the Shark is really worth it?
So, yeah, I mean, that's the thing, right? Like, it always comes down to a price point, and I go, like, the Hemingway, which I think the last time I bought a box of Hemingway, I think I got it from Atlantic Cigar Company, because they're Canadian-friendly, and I had them shipped to, I think it was actually the last time we were in Vegas, I had them shipped, and this wasn't with IPCPR, but I was just down in Vegas, and I had a box of Hemingway shipped to me, and I think, like, the price point worked out to, like, $5-something a stick, which is just absurd, because, you know, like, to me, it performs like a $10 cigar, but I think they were $5.35 or $5.40 a stick, which, you know, I felt great because I got it on a budget. But, you know, when we go down to Vegas, we're probably going to hit some cigar shops up. And I don't even know what the price point on a Shark is. Like, I want to say it's $18 or $22. And that's a lot of ducats. And there is definitely diminishing returns. Like, we talk about whiskey, you know, $70 whiskey versus $150 whiskey. Is it twice as good? Probably not. I mean, it's nice. It's a nice to have, but do I want, like, would I rather have, say, you know, 5 Hemingways to 1 Shark? Well, that's a lot of great smoking experience for 1 Shark. It isn't to say the Shark is a bad cigar, because it's a phenomenal cigar. It's just sometimes it's tough to justify those price points.
Yeah, I'm looking here, and I'm sticking with Neptune just because I've bought from them before. They were one of the first ones that came up when I searched for this, but I'm looking at the price point, a single of the 46, which is what I'm smoking, is $9.56.
Which is pretty good.
And then you scroll down and a single of the Shark is $11.82. So it's really not that big of a difference.
It's not that bad.
The problem is finding the Shark in stock.
Yeah.
I mean, personally, I've smoked probably like 4 or 5 different Vitolas of the Añejo. I look through here. I've smoked the 46. I smoked the 48, the 49, and the 50. I have not smoked the 55, which is a Torpedo. It's a 6x55. I haven't smoked that. I have not smoked the 60, which is 6.25x48, but I imagine that's just as good as the regular 48. It might even be better. It's a little shorter. I have not smoked the 888, but I've smoked the Shark. So I've smoked 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 different versions. And to me, the 46 has always stood out as the best. Mm-hmm. It's all, and I don't know if it's just the ratio of wrapper to filler or whatever. It's just, this to me is the best expression for the flavor profile that I want. But yeah, I mean, really, at that, I remember Añejos being a lot more expensive than this. So looking at these, I mean, they get, when you get into the bigger ones, the 49 is a 7 5/8x49. That's a big cigar,
yep.
And that's $12 bucks. But that's the most expensive. So they're not that bad, and they're just fantastic. Again, they're going to be listed. If you haven't smoked one yet, they're listed as a full strength, full body cigar. If you're used to smoking Roma Craft and LFDs and stuff like that, temper your expectations of the strength, because they're not going to come in at the same strength profile, but it's still just an absolutely fine cigar.
So I'm going to talk a little bit about Japanese distilleries, because we really didn't have time to sort of wax poetic about Japanese distilleries, and we've talked about, you know, they have been open since 1923, and there's sort of 3 categories of Japanese distilleries. So there's either the Suntory bundle, which is really at this point Yamazaki and Hakushu. That's really the 2 distilleries they've got open. You've got Nikka, which is Yoichi and Miyagikyo, And then you've got independents. And it's interesting to me that the independents have really stepped up. Of course, we've talked time and time again about Chichibu as being, it's a very new distillery. I think they only opened in 2010, but the product they're putting out is absolutely mind-blowing. There's another independent distillery called Fuji Gotemba, which is, I haven't had any of those products, but I'd be interested to try them because, you know, love Japanese whiskey. And then there's a distillery called Shinshu. And then there's another distillery called Igashima. And Igashima is widely known for the product. I think the product goes by White Oak. All their product is described as White Oak. That's kind of their brand. But what's interesting to me when I was looking up Japanese distilleries and trying to get a handle on it is the number of closed distilleries. And one of the products I'm going to be bringing down with me to the IPCPR, and I think I might have given you a sample, was the Kurizawa, and it's a closed distillery, and with all closed distilleries, the product becomes obscenely expensive, but I picked up a bottle, and I've talked about it on the show before, the price point was just mind-blowingly up there, but it was a single cask, I think it's an 18-year, it was a Scotch and Malt Whiskey Society bottling, and I think I gave you a sample, I don't know if you've tried it yet or not, but...
I didn't see it in the in the samples that I've got everything that you gave me in a box. What I did see is there is some really good Scotch in there, so I feel like our next show should be a Scotch show, because there's some serious 30-year-old, the one from 1975, which is your birth year, there's some serious stuff in there. That we could, I think maybe, I don't know, you probably know better about a pairing because I haven't tasted any of these yet. I mean, the first thing I think of is Padron, but, you know, maybe there's something that that might pair a little bit better. But that sounds like that would be a fun show to do right before IPCPR. We got one next week, right?
Yeah, that's going to be our last show before the IPCPR. So I'm totally down with that. I think we could definitely crack out some nice long-aged Scotch whiskey. I think I'll have to send you the number on the Kurizawa because I think it's just a number statement. And I think it's like 126, but we can check that out after the show.
Okay. Yeah, yeah.
But just to give people a sense of how many closed Japanese distilleries are out there, there's Kawasaki. There's
The motorcycle?
Like the motorcycle. There's Kagashimi. There's not to be confused with Yamazaki. It's Yamazakura and Yashin Amura. I apologize because I do not speak Japanese, so I'm sure I'm butchering these names. But it's Nishin Umiya. Nishin Umiya. Well, a closed distillery. There's Sujira, which is closed, and I just talked about Kurizawa, which... the Kurizawa, frankly, probably one of the best Japanese whiskeys I've ever had next to Chichibu. Wow. One of the things I liked about that, of course, it was a single cask distilling, and it is cask strength. I think it comes in at either 58 or 62%. So it's just mind-blowingly huge.
Wow.
But, you know, again, because it's sort of the Japanese philosophy of whiskey distilling, it's got so much complexity to it and so much body. Just incredible.
Yeah. So this is way off topic, but I want to do a little screen share here to show you guys what Pennywise is going to look like. If you're into this at all,
you should put out a warning for anyone who's freaked out by clowns.
This looks creepy as all hell, dude. I mean, look at this guy. Can you see that?
That is creepy as all get out.
And clowns freak me out to begin with, but that dude just looks scary as hell. Woof. Anyway. Yeah. I'm going to get rid of that, but how do I get rid of it?
I think you have to click screen share.
Yeah, it needed it to go away, but yeah, I'm really pumped that they're making a movie, and I think it's going to be it's going to be a part one and part two, because the only movie that exists is that it was a made-for-TV like miniseries, which was actually pretty good, all things considered. Yeah. But there was some serious tweaks; they left a lot out. If you're taking this book and you're stretching out into two movies, you can hit up a lot of stuff. And it's a great, great book. But and they're also doing the Dark Tower. If you're into that at all, the casting choices that they had are pretty awesome. But nobody cares, so we'll move on. I feel like we should find maybe do some research. I know you sent out a link about some good places to eat in Vegas. I imagine we can find some pretty good places to find some Japanese whiskeys and do some tastings and things like that. That might get expensive. But maybe we do a cheap dinner that night and head out and do some whiskey tasting. That might be fun.
Well, and I think there's some really cool cocktail places there as well. Some of the interesting finds. Thanks very much to Bill Williams for sharing that on Facebook. Bill is a native of Las Vegas, and Bill's a super good guy, brother of the Leaf, and he shared a link on some really cool places to get good dinners and good beverages. And he listed, I think there was no less than 4 places that had just incredible cocktails. And what I like to see as a Canadian and as a Scot on a budget. So, you know, I like to go to a place that's got cocktails and I'm not paying $12 a cocktail.
No, you're going to pay, that's the budget cocktail is $12.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, these cocktails were well below the $12 price point. Which
really? Was, I haven't, yeah. I saw the link that you shared it with us in an email. I haven't looked at it yet. But I know that my wife, Dana, is good for some research on places that we should go. The last time we were in Vegas, she gave us a bunch of different places that we should go to and eat. Given the group that we were with, didn't necessarily pan out. But I have a feeling that there might be some breakoffs. I can see you and me and On going out to dinner and then going to drinks because we appreciate it, I think, more than the rest of the group. Mm-hmm. Or I shouldn't say appreciate it more. It's more in our wheelhouse than the rest of the group. So I could see a breakout cocktail session, maybe a breakout whiskey session, definitely a couple of breakout beer sessions. That's going to happen too. Although I think Jared's down with the beer, so we'll see.
Jared's always down with the beer, I think. Yeah, so there is definitely, I think there was a minimum of 3, probably 4 places where you could get really good cocktails during the quote-unquote happy hour. They're reasonably inexpensive. And, you know, we've done a bunch of cocktail shows, and I enjoy cocktails, and I'm definitely excited to go to Vegas and try a couple different places that have high-end spirits, some really cool cocktails, and maybe some places where they do pairings. And of course, because it's Vegas, there's probably a pretty good chance we can find a place that's cigar friendly, so we can kind of combine food, spirit, and cigars and do a kind of a little mini sharing our pairings, which we may, you know, we'll do on Periscope on Twitter for a couple minutes, or even on the new Facebook Live, which is kind of cool.
Yeah, that seems to be pretty popular. I could definitely see that happening. Yeah, it's going to be fun, man. It's right around the corner. It's right around the corner.
Yeah, I mean, we're literally week and 2 days. No, that's not even right. We're 11 days away from IPCPR in Vegas.
I had to do the math yesterday. I got a work project, and it's a pretty sizable work project, and the deadline was that Tuesday that we're gone. And so I'm looking at it, and I'm thinking, okay, can I finish this 4 days before the deadline and get it done by that Friday beforehand so I'm not working over the weekend? Because we fly out on Sunday, or at least I do. I think we all do. And so Saturday's got to be spent with the wife. If I spend Saturday working, it's not going to go over too well. So it's busy times at RHR Enterprises. I'll tell you that. That's for sure.
Yeah, I had a funny experience with Laura, who is my significant other, and she was looking at the calendar for the.
You guys have been together for 5 years.
Yeah, we just had a 5-year anniversary. Thank you very much. I can't believe she's tolerated my shenanigans for 5 years. So God bless her for sure. But she was looking at the calendar, you know, I really, because now with my new gig, which is in the cigar industry, everything lives or dies by the calendar. And she was kind of looking at the weekends coming up, and she's like, you don't have any weekends free for like the next 2 or 3 months. And I'm like, yeah, that's pretty much the case. I said, you know, I had a cigar event booked originally for this weekend, which looks like it's going to be rescheduled for August, which makes my August crazy. But other than that, you know, we're really... I'm kind of in IPCPR mode right now, where I'm kind of wrapping up things at work, doing my stuff that I need to do for work, but kind of focused on getting ready for IPCPR, because 11 days is nothing. You know, that's the time where you start looking at potentially packing, making sure you have everything prepped and ready, because once it starts, I mean, it's a bit of a gong show. I mean, it goes quick.
All hell breaks loose. I was looking at it. And I feel like this is the only time we ever talk about IPCPR. It's funny. I get in Sunday morning-ish, and then it's Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and then we fly out Thursday. So it's 3 full days and then a half day. And that half day, I feel like we get so much done on that half day.
Yep.
We talk to a lot of people on that half day because it's empty. It's, you know, the booths that we go by that are busy all the time. Tatuaje, for example, it's almost impossible to get a chance to sit down and talk with Pete. But on that last day, we hop in and sit down and spend a bunch of time with Pete. It's Pete Johnson, that is, Tatuaje. And it is a whirlwind. You're right. It's a shit storm of just running around. But again, I'm never going to complain about it because it is awesome. And yeah, it's exciting. I'm looking forward to it. This year especially is going to be nuts. I mean, if you guys are following CigarFederation.com, which you should be on the app or whatever it is you choose to follow it on, I feel like every day I send all of our press releases go through Matt, who's one of our mods. And I feel like every day I'm sending Matt 5 or 6 press releases to post up. You know, there's so many releases. Everybody's got a release every freaking day. It's nuts.
Yeah, just to give people a sense of it, just today, so just this today, July the 13th, Matt has posted 4 press releases of new releases, new blends, all of them coming out for the IPCPR.
Yeah, it's
and to
crazy.
Be honest, I don't even think that covers it. I think when I was looking at some of the media sites, it was like 8 or 9 releases just today.
There's a lot of sites, Half Wheel, Coop, Cigar Coop, that is, who they hustle out and they track down the news. That's not really our gig. We post it when it's shared with us, and that's really about as far as we go. I mean, I see stuff on Facebook. I see guys posting things on Facebook and Instagram. Like, here's a sneak peek at this, sneak peek at that. Those guys track that stuff down. So if you really want your news, you know, go to CigarCoop.com or HalfWheel.com. You're going to get all of it there. We're a bit more of a network and a what would we say, community on CigarFederation.com. We try to filter through as much news as we can. When we get it, but tracking it down isn't really our deal. So if you see five news posts from us, there's probably 15 or 20. Who knows? There's just so much. And combine that with everything that's going on with the FDA, it's everywhere. There's news everywhere. So
And we're going to be talking in depth about what we've got in store for our IPCPR coverage next Thursday. It's kind of a special cigar chat. We do have a guest, which is SaveTheLeaf.org, but a good portion of that show is going to be dedicated to talking about what we're doing for the IPCPR. And I think, you know, one of the things that we're excited about, I know you're excited about, I'm excited about, is that we're not going to be dedicating 21 hours in a day to IPCPR. We're gonna work hard at the show, but then we're gonna be going out and enjoying some of the events with some of the retailers, some of the manufacturers. Certainly, we're gonna be out on our own, like we've already talked about, doing some finding some cool spots, finding some cool cigar lounges, because there's a bunch of new cigar lounges that opened in Vegas.
Yeah, it's it's gonna be cool. I think the approach that, and we haven't really talked about this, and maybe I'm speaking out of turn, but maybe I'll just try to do this on my own if we don't want to do it as a group, but give our viewers and followers and readers and everything a bit more of a Vegas experience. You know, like you said, checking in live on Facebook and things of that nature at the different places that we go to. Not to like humble brag and say, look how cool this is, look where I am and you're not here, but to give you an idea of as a cigar smoker, if you're going to Vegas, which many people do, maybe you're going to Vegas in September. And here's a couple of cool places that we checked out. I feel like we have an opportunity to relay a lot of that information to our readers and viewers that we haven't really been able to take advantage of the last few years anyway. So hopefully we can provide, take our video coverage and of IPCPR, the show, and really, excuse me, expand it to show you guys there's a lot more going on. There's obviously a lot going on in Vegas, but as a cigar-friendly town, there's a lot of places and things that you can do. Like you were saying, there's probably bars where we can go get, you know, these artisan cocktails and have a cigar at the same time. That never even crossed my mind, because in California, it's like, that's not even close to being an option.
Yep.
But in Vegas, it is. So it's, in most places around the country, it's not an option. So, I think that's another goal that at least I personally have, and hopefully the group kind of embraces that too, and we can share a little bit more of just the things that you can do as a cigar smoker in Vegas.
And you'll definitely want to stay tuned both to our YouTube coverage, which will be having high-end video coming out. I'm sure we're going to have some Facebook or Periscope coverage at particular events we attend. And then, of course, podcast coverage. We're going to be converting all of those video coverage to podcasts. So if you don't have the chance to watch it on YouTube, or you just don't want to see our faces, which is perfectly fair.
Copy that.
you can check out the podcast coverage, and we're going to have all of that stuff up on podcast. So you can, you know, get little 10-minute or 8-minute sound bites of what's new at a particular booth. And it's going to be hundreds and hundreds of booths of coverage this year because everyone is bringing their A game with the FDA date looming on August 8th. Everyone's going to bring their A game for the IPCPR.
You know, it's funny. I one company that I haven't really seen anything new from or anything released yet that I'm really intrigued about, and I was going to bring this up more so next week, but I'll bring it up now because I'm holding this, but Crux, because I happen to be holding this particular cutter. I'm curious to see what they're going to be coming out with. I know that the Guilds, I think, got delayed from last year and was just recently released, and they've got that PB5 or whatever it was their limited edition. Actually, they have an IPCPR, it's actually called the IPCPR Limitata, which I think is kind of cool. So yeah, that's just one of the companies that I'm curious to see. How are they, what are they going to do, and how are they going to attack this FDA thing? And I'm hoping that a lot of our interviews don't turn out to be downers, but I'm guessing they won't.
Yeah, I mean, I think we're going to try and keep a positive image going into the IPCPR. I mean, I know a lot of people want to know what the FDA strategy is from particular companies, but you know, ultimately we want to bring out coverage about what the manufacturer is doing, what they're bringing out for cigars. What's new, what's old, because we are going to see, you know, we were seeing, I think we were talking today about on the Cigar Federation chat, the live chat, we were talking about one of the cigars from Skip's factory that's going to become a regular release. And I kind of said, of course it's going to become a regular release, because right now you've got that window where anything you've released ever in the past as a limited release or one-time release or a shop exclusive, that's your opportunity to release it on the market and get it on the market and have it out, and you've got a 2-year grace period. So I think, you know, conservatively we're talking about 500 or 600 releases, but in actuality, it's not outside the realm of believability that we could see 1,000 new cigars or old new cigars or new cigars at the IPCPR, which is just, I mean, that's insane.
Really, when you think about it, though, they're all limited releases. Well, not all of them. But a lot of them are, because a lot of them are going to be from companies that aren't going to be able to afford to have them on the market any longer than 2 years. So that's another way to think about it, too. But this is all stuff we can talk about next week.
Absolutely. So make sure to tune into that show next Thursday. That'll be Cigar Chat. Make sure to tune into Cornelius and Anthony tomorrow night. That'll be a great coverage. That'll be our last guest, other than Save the Leaf, before the IPCPR coverage, which is going to be coming up right around the corner. I appreciate all our live listeners. Appreciate all our Armed Forces Radio Network listeners who have tuned back off at the 58-minute mark, and all of our podcast listeners who are out there in droves, thanks for supporting the show. Thanks for tuning into the show. And as we always say on sharing our pairings, drink better, but drink less.